HD Smartcast.
You are listening to an HD Smartcast original.
एक मिनट रुक जाओ, रेडी होने दो. चलो ये कर लेते हैं. दिस कुड बी अ ग्रेट इंट्रो.
हाय, आई एम अक्षय.
हाय, दिस इज सौरभ एंड यू आर लिसनिंग टू द फाउंडर थीसिस पॉडकास्ट. We meet some of the most celebrated startup founders in the country.
And we want to learn how to build a unicorn.
I was baffled. So I went for a couple of meetings and people are offering me, you know, we will pay you $2 million. We'll invest $2 million for 25% of your company. I was like shocked. I was doing the math and in my head and at $2 million. So I said, yeah, it's an art program for a company that's just done 18 lakhs. And I was shocked, but I couldn't believe it, you know, and it sounded too good to be true. And I asked him, but you know, 8 crores, what should we do with the money?
If I have seen further, it is by standing on the shoulders of giants. These words by Isaac Newton still ring true, and it's our great privilege to present to you one of the giants of the startup world in India, on whose shoulders so many of today's most celebrated founders have stood. He's the one who was a pioneer in creating an online business that he took to IPO. His company is now among the most active investors in the startup world, backing unicorns like Policybazaar and Zomato. I'm sure by now you have already guessed who Akshay Dutt is talking to. It's none other than Sanjeev Bikhchandani, founder of InfoEdge and the man who inspired millions. Here's their insightful conversation about Sanjeev's journey.
Hi, I'm Sanjeev Bikhchandani. I'm the co-founder of Naukri.com.
So, Sanjeev, tell me about your childhood. Where did you grow up? What was your family like?
I'm 57. I've spent most of my life in Delhi. I think barring 4 years, 2 years in Bombay in my first job and 2 years at Ahmedabad for business school, I spent 53 years in Delhi. So I was born in Delhi. My father was a government servant, so we lived in government colonies. And that's where I grew up. That's where I spent the first 20-odd years of my life.
Which part of Delhi?
So my father was a doctor in the government. So the earliest memory I have is a couple of houses in the MP flats in South Avenue. But my father was in charge of the dispensary in South Avenue, the MP's dispensary. And then we shifted to Chanakyapuri, Satyamarg, the D1 flats. And then my parents went abroad. And when they came back, we moved to Kidwainagar, from where my father retired. And we moved to our own house in Swast Vihar in East Delhi. Mm-hmm.
Where did you go abroad? And how old were you? Like, do you have...
So I did not go abroad. My parents went abroad. I was staying in Delhi.
And so, you know, entrepreneurship ka keeda, was that there in childhood also? Like,
well, when I was 12 or 13, I sort of figured that maybe at some point in time, it'll be a good idea, you know, to be independent and run your own company and things. So for that time, independence was a big thing for me. You know, of course, you know, when you're 12, you have a new dream every 6 months. But this one kept coming back. So by the time I had finished school, I was in class 11 or 12, I was reasonably clear that this is a long-term goal. Sometime I will do it. How, when, where, I did not know. But
you have like a role model that you admired and like, you know, like a Tata Birla kind of a role model because of which you wanted to do business? Or like, how did that business come into your mind?
I know, I don't actually recall how it came in. No, I did not have a role model. I've never had a single role model in my life. You know, you learn different things from different people. So I've tried to learn as much as possible from various different people. But I've had the good fortune of having worked with many, many people who are superbly talented and smart. And therefore, I learned a lot from all my colleagues and my peers and my seniors.
Okay. But yeah, you were in Columbus, right?
So I was in Columbus School in Delhi for 12 years.
And most kids in Columbus come from service class families where like a job would be their ambition eventually.
Well, a significant percentage come from service class families. And you know, I'm like me, my father was in the government, my mother was a homemaker. But there was some who were families were from business families as well. I mean, you know, any school in Delhi, you'll find a certain percentage of business families. But yeah, it was largely a hardworking middle class family, boys' school.
Okay. And then you joined Stephens.
I joined St. Stephen's College after class 12. I had the good fortune of getting admission into the economics program there, and I joined.
So was that like a transformative experience going to DU and especially from a boys' college to a co-ed kind
of? Well, so actually, you see, St. Columbus is the kind of school in those days where if you're a good boy, you do science. sports, and then all good boys did either in engineering or medicine. Engineering in those days, you know, beyond the IITs, at least in St. Columbus, you did not think. So I did science. My father's a doctor. My brother had gone to IIT Kanpur, and then I'm in Ahmedabad. And I prepared hard, and as luck would have it, I got in, into IIT. Now, when I was finishing school, there was a three-year window where you could write the IIT entrance after class 11 or after class 12, because the country was just shifting from class 11 to class 12, and the different states were shifting at different times over a three-year period. So the IIT that said you can even join after class 11, it's fine. You don't have to complete. We don't need a school passing certificate. So being competitive Indians, and everyone would want to go after class 11 and save a year. So I wrote it after class 11, and I got in after class 11. When I went for the medical counseling, I learned that I was partially colorblind. Now, so the people there said, you can join and it's fine. But some careers and some courses may be close to you, but it's fine. You can join. Right? And it'll go down in your permanent medical record, that you're partially colorblind. And that was the first time I sat and thought, because, I figured it was a risk. Because, if for some reason I have to leave IIT after 1 or 2 years, I won't even be a high school pass, because I've only passed class 11. So I thought long and hard about it. And mine was the last year when you could write it after class 11. IIT was a 5-year course then. And the next year, only class 12 pass could write it. And it was becoming a 4-year course. So I figured that, my junior batch can't write it. All the good guys in my batch have already gotten and will go after class 11. Right? It's becoming a 4-year course, so I won't lose a year.
Right.
So why don't I continue in school, finish class 12, and write the exam again? Which is what I did. Right? I wrote the exam again. But in that 1 year, I sat, thought long and hard. Because, with this colorblindness thing, for the first time, I began to question, why do I want to be an engineer? And I realized that, I didn't really want to be an engineer. I just wanted to be an IITian. I was joining a club. I wasn't, I could pass an exam. I knew physics, chemistry, maths, I could study hard. But if you asked me, engineering ki naukri kya hai, kya kaam karunga exactly, would I have passion for that? Truth is, at 17 or 18, I didn't have passion for anything, right? We were all, most of us, reasonably clueless, drifting along, following the herd, and trying to study hard and make something of our lives. And I realized that I want to be an IIT. I don't want to be an engineer. After class 12, I got into IIT a second time, and I got St. Stephen's Economics. And I said, look, this is a 3-year program, it's a 4-year program. Why should I study something I'm not passionate about for 4 years when I can study something I'm not passionate about for 3 years? I had no clue of economics. Okay. I had done science with biology. I had just got the marks and I was decent in an interview and I got through. And I weighed the two options and I chose to go to St. Stephen's Economics. And yes, it was a growing up experience. It was a transformative experience. I'm afraid I didn't study very hard, but I made a lot of good friends and made a lot of good memories. The coming of age experience. But I did find parts of economics very, very interesting. Microeconomics, macroeconomics, I found very interesting.
Were you like the shy kind of student or the outgoing student who would participate in debates and all that?
No, I would not do debates, elocution. I had stage fright. I used to play sports. So I played hockey for college. I got college colors in hockey. With my close friends, I would be outgoing, extroverted, but outside my close friends, I was a reasonably quiet sort of person. I would observe and listen more than speak when I was people I didn't know.
So after 3 years at Stephen's, what did you decide to do?
So what had happened was my brother, who had been a brilliant student, and he was in the same school as me, St. Columbus, 7 years senior to me, and he had always come first in class, right? And in my life, in my entire academic career, I have never come first in class, okay? I've always managed, and I used to, in the big exams, I would score enough to achieve my goal and objective. But no, nobody would call me a outstanding academic performer or a brilliant student. I was good enough to get to where I wanted to go. Right? So my brother went to IIT Kanpur. Then he went to IIM Ahmedabad. Right? And when he finished from there, he worked for a year. And then he said, I don't like this. I don't like the corporate sector. I want to do a PhD. And he went and did a PhD in the US. So in 1981, I had just joined college. And my brother, and there were three or four four of his batchmates from IIM Ahmedabad, they had all chucked up their jobs and they were all going to the US for doing their PhDs. So there was a lunch at our house, and you know, his friends from IIM Ahmedabad had come from out of town for the visa interviews. And so I asked all four of them, including my brother, why are you guys doing this? You know, why are you chucking up a great corporate career after doing an MBA from IIM Ahmedabad to go and do a PhD? And they said, we made a mistake. We should not have done an MBA. We should have worked for 2-3 years after engineering in the corporate sector to figure out if this is what we want to do, and only then done an MBA. And if we didn't want life in the corporate sector, we could have gone for a PhD maybe 2 years ago after working for 1 year straight after engineering. And in any case, they said that if you want to do an MBA, and I wanted to do an MBA from the beginning, our suggestion is that you work for 2 or 3 years, okay, and then do an MBA, because you will gain a lot more from your program. Because, you know, for us, it's an extension of college. We went straight from IIT to IIM Ahmedabad and without working. And we could not really correlate what we were being taught with real life situations because we had not experienced that. And they said the best university in the US insist on 2 or 3 years work experience. And there's a reason for that you get more from your MBA if you work before. So that stuck with me. So when I was in my third year in college, and also what had happened was that in college, there was somebody senior to me, 1 year senior, who actually managed to get a scholarship to do an MBA from the US, from Duke University. Now, that was an eye-opener, because typically people in those days at least got scholarships only to do masters and PhDs. So it occurred to me that an MBA scholarship is possible in the US. So I put 2 and 2 together, my brother's friend's advice, and this is what had happened. And I said, why don't I work for 2 years and then apply overseas for an MBA? And if with some luck, I'll get a scholarship. And I got a job straight after college at Libtest in advertising. Coincidentally, in those days, as after a BA, you couldn't really get jobs. Okay, you know, it's not like today, right? And so I had also written the CAT, and I had got an offer from IIM Calcutta, and I had got a job at Lintas. I decided to work for 2 years and apply overseas, which I did. I got admissions, but no scholarship, right? So I didn't go.
What was your role at Lintas?
I was in account servicing. I was in client servicing, you know, account management, and I was a trainee. You know, I was there for 3 years. So for the first 2 years, I was a trainee, and last year I was a junior account executive. The job is the same. It's just your title changes, your salary changes.
But did it teach you anything much?
It taught me a whole lot. I mean, I think, I think just as, you know, a child learns the maximum in the first 3 or 4 years and absorbs the most, I think in the first 3 or 4 years of your career, you learn the most and your work ethic is set. So it's really important, I think, that your first job is in the right place where you learn the most and you learn from good people and it's a good environment. Because that will more or less set your professional standards, your work ethic, your integrity at the workplace. And I was really fortunate to have got that 3 years in Lintas. I mean, there were some really super smart people I was working with. And I got some good opportunities, some good clients. Both in the client side and the agent side, there were some really good people. So that taught me a lot, you know, whether it was, you know. So first of all, I worked harder in those 3 years than I've ever worked in my life. You know, in those 3 years, I didn't take a single day's leave. I worked all my Saturdays. It was a 5-day week, but I worked all my Saturdays. I worked all holidays.
Wow, okay.
I worked half my Sundays. You see, account servicing is a very, very operational intensive job. It's a coordination job. And there's always something, some fire fighting going on, always, right? And so, you know, when you're thrown in the deep end and you just got to make it happen. So in terms of, first of all, working hard, I learned the value of working hard over there, really hard. Long hours from 9 a.m. till maybe 10, 11 p.m., 6 days a week, or 3 years in a row, half your Sundays also gone, right? I was a shy, introverted person, not actually great at talking to people and persuading them and communicating to them, unless I already knew them. With my friends, I was okay, but outside my circle of friends, I was not. Now, the role of an account servicing person is essentially that of coordination. And as a junior executive in account servicing or a trainee in account servicing, no, you are at the bottom of the totem pole. You are at the bottom of the food chain. There's no, you are responsible, you are accountable for outcomes to everybody, to your boss, your boss's boss, to the client, right? Nobody's reporting to you. And your job is to coordinate and get the work done out of 10, 15, 20 other departments. You know, whether it is copywriting, art direction, art production, film production, script writing, translation, media planning, media operations. There are 10, 15 departments you work with. And in all those departments, you know, there were people who were older than me, senior to me, who, if they missed my deadline, they would not be pulled up, and they're not reporting to me. I'm younger than them by 7, 8, 10 years anyway. I'm 21, okay. Right? So basically, you've got to get work out and get work done in such situations. So you learn. I mean, you know, people have to want to work with you. People have to want to work for you, and people have to want to stretch for you. Say, I'll sit late to meet the deadline. I'll come on Saturday to meet the deadline. I'll work on Sunday to meet the deadline. You know, and right? And
so you learned like persuasion and saying, "Yaar, please."
I learned to beg, cajole, plead. You know, just do it by dint of hard work, put in more hours, and somehow. And I think people skills, main wahan seekha. So all my rough edges, like, look, I had an ID admission. I went to Stephen and studied economics. I had an IIM admission. You know, I'm super smart. All that was knocked off within 6 months, right? When I had to go at 3 a.m. to a printing press on my two-wheeler in the middle of winter, you know, really bitterly cold, pick up some positives for printing. They had to go to Bombay the same day. From there, I went to the airport, and I was standing outside the airport cajoling passengers to please carry this packet for me. In those days, there was no security problems, right? And finally, you know, I met one passenger. My mobile phone didn't go today. I met one passenger who said, okay, I'll carry them for you. I said, my guy will come and meet you at the airport, and he will be carrying a placard. And so in case he misses you, what is your home office phone number where you will be? So he can call you on the landline. Then rushing to office to phone up Bombay, the guy waiting there saying, now go to the airport. This is the gentleman. This is what is coming. He's coming on this flight. Stand on the placard and pick up the positive and then deliver it to the printer there. You know, so stuff, it's highly, highly operational. There's stuff like that you do. And or you got a request from a client, a very important client in Bombay, from the head office in Bombay, said, you know, us samay ek hi TV channel hota tha, Doordarshan. So the big game would be, which is going to be the first advertisement in the ad capsule on Chitrahar or Sunday feature film. But the first advertisement will get the most views, because by the second ad, people go about doing their business and they come back when the ads are over. It's not very particular. So, you know, then you go and sit late at night, talk to the guy, Doordarshan, boss, please put our ad first. Please put our ad first. I mean, of course, they have their own thing, right? But you got to try. So, you know, all those things, you know, the highly, highly operational things, the stuff that, you do manual labor also. I remember we had a presentation for a client in a building in Connaught Place on the 10th floor. Now, to set up the presentation, you have to take projectors and artworks and काफी सामान ले रहा था उनके conference room में. तो जब हम पहुंचे तो 5 minutes बचे थे, 10 minutes बचे थे. There was a massive long line for the lift. There was no way I was going to make it up next half an hour because lunch had just got over. I should have come 2 hours earlier, right? But we didn't because we were meeting deadlines. Just about made it. So I remember walking up 10 floors carrying all this stuff, okay, to arrive there and still be on time. So you know, I thought this thing of doing whatever it takes, never mind how menial the work is, you know, how seemingly small it is. I think that work ethic was set there.
I think you must have also learned about how to build a culture of performance. It sounds like Lintas had a great performance.
It did. So people skills, stretching, working hard, somehow getting it done, doing what it takes, the attitude, the work ethic, all that was set there. Also, I had the exposure, great exposure to strategy, communication and marketing strategy. So I had seniors there who was really smart at this, and I would just sit and listen and learn. And then contribute. I began to contribute also.
So you finished 2 years there, got a...
Actually, I applied abroad after 2 years. I didn't get a scholarship. I didn't go. So I spent a third year there. So I wrote the CAT again after 3 years. And this time I got into, you know, IMA and went there.
But why did you want to do an MBA? Was it again for the tag? Like you thought about IIT that you wanted a tag?
No, I thought... This one, I was pretty clear. It would be a useful course. I learned useful stuff. It'll help me when I become an entrepreneur. I went for learning. Us zamane mein, the word networking had not been invented. So, and mujhe placement, I wasn't very keen on. I'll take any job I get, but main ek do saal baad, I will quit and do my own company.
So, how were those 2 years at IIM Ahmedabad like?
I think very good. I think super blurry. So the thing about it, again, you got to work really hard in IIM, you know, it's a pressure cooker, you know, atmosphere, environment. But after 3 years of Lintas, I did not feel any pressure because I had worked much harder at Lintas. Okay. So, it was very good, useful learning. And, so see, the MBA, it is said, and it's true, that you don't use 90% of what you learn there. Probably you don't know which 90% when you're there.
Okay.
So you learn a thousand things. You will use maybe 100, but those 100 are very useful. And should you want to use 100 first, at least you know where to find it because you've been taught it all.
And did you also have a campus romance? Like you met your future wife on campus. Did it like blossom while you were studying?
Yeah, we met there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So did you get married as soon as you passed out or like?
Maybe a year later.
Okay. So from campus, then what did you take up?
So I campus mein hua kya ki in those days companies would come to IIMs to only hire management trainees, right? So if you had work experience, you know, you had to write it off by and large. Almost nobody would give credit for your past work experience, even if it was relevant. And I had worked 3 years in advertising. I said this is very relevant for brand management and companies in FMCG companies. I could have gone back to advertising, but I didn't want to. I wanted to be in FMCG consumer marketing, and I went there. I discovered that I would have to join as a trainee because nobody was coming here and hiring laterally. So campus placement rules were that if there was a particular company that was not coming to campus, you could apply directly. If it was coming to campus, you could not approach them. So I went through a list of companies that were coming, and I saw that HMM, which is now called GlaxoSmithKline, but then it was called HMM, was not coming to campus.
What were the products they were making at that time?
Horlicks, Boost, Real Cream, Eno, Marmite, right? So I wrote to them saying, look, I'm very keen. And I also wanted to go back to Delhi after 2 years in Bombay. Because I said, I'll go home. I'll be able to save some money. When I quit after 2 years, I'll be able to start a company with the savings. Right? And if I'm staying at home with my parents, my cost will be lower. So when I do my own startup, you know, I can survive without earning money. So this is a Delhi-based company. And it's FMCG, MNC, good brands. It was ideal. They called me for an interview. I came to Delhi for the interview. While I took a weekend off, I took a day off and came.
This was not a weekend. During your second year?
My second year and third term.
Okay. Hmm.
And I got the offer and I came back and I went back and I dropped out of placement. And so I worked for about a year and a half, maybe almost 2 years at HMM after IIM.
And what was your role then?
And I was product executive. So I was in brand management. I was product executive reporting to the product manager. You know, who was reporting to the marketing manager? Who was reporting to the marketing manager? But as luck would have it, within 6 months, the product manager left and the vacancy wasn't filled for a year. So de facto, I was doing his job also. And that was good exposure again. So that is a useful experience too. Hmm.
So why did you quit from there then, from HMM?
So look, I had gone. So in advertising, right, I was servicing some really good clients. Now you always... I used to look up to my clients and say, these are smart guys. It's the job I'd like to do. And therefore, I wanted to be on the client side after IMA. I did not want to be in the ad agency. But having migrated to client side, I did not find it particularly enthusing. You know, so in the 80s, this is pre-liberalization, you know, MNCs weren't that dynamic as they are today. Large companies are not dynamic. You know, ek bari product succeed ho gaya, then you're happy with 10-12% growth year on year. You know that you can't be dislodged. You build a brand. You've got distribution in place. Customers are buying your product. Competition isn't very high. You know, so it's a maintenance kind of job. And I didn't feel very enthused, you know, doing that. So a year and a half later, I quit and said I'll do my own thing.
So tell me about the day you quit. Were you clear on that day that this is what I want to do? Or was it just that?
First of all, I did not. I was very nervous. I was scared. I would go for 6 months. I'd go to office every day saying, I'll quit today.
Okay.
But I could not muster up the courage to actually quit. I'm from middle class family. My father and the salary all his life. I wanted a salary check and I was very, very nervous. But finally, one evening, I went to the marketing manager's house. Okay, I couldn't do it in an office. I went to his house and, you know, so he and his wife had just had a baby. So I took along a bunch of roses to see the baby and his wife. And while I was there, you know, we sat in the drawing room for half an hour and I said, look, I want to quit. And so he said, okay, fine. Where are you going? I said, no, I'm going to do my own thing. He said, then you have a slightly open schedule. You don't have to go on a certain date. I said, no. He says, give me 3 months. Let me figure out who will replace you. So I gave time. And I went beyond the notice period in the formula and we agreed on it. And I didn't have a particular joining date. And so I quit.
But did you have an idea on what you want to do?
Yeah, I had an idea. So basically, when I was, when I went back to campus after getting my job at HMM and I dropped out of placement, I'd gone to the placement chair, who's a professor. I said, sir, I'm dropping out of placement. I have got a job. He says, which job? I hope you haven't broken any rules. I said, no, I've got a job at HMM. He said, oh, excellent. Then he said, look, I need help. And he sort of commandeered me and made me volunteer to help him during placement. Now, there were 3-4 of us who were not taking placement. The others were basically writing a civil services exam and therefore they had deferred the placement for it by a year. And they were taking a year off to prepare for the exam. So he told us, your job is to receive the HR managers, the recruitment managers, the companies at the gate. gate of the campus, escort them to the interview rooms, make sure tea, coffee, biscuits are served, make sure that candidates are lining up in order. You'll have the list of people who've been shortlisted for interviews. Make sure that people go in for the interview, come out of the interview, you know, things happen. And at lunchtime, you take them for lunch, sit with them, have lunch, bring them back, again, tea, coffee, biscuit, afternoon. And at 5 o'clock when they end, you take them to placement office. So the formalities that which is the offers they've made, not made, all that can be tabulated. And then at 5:30, they will leave campus. You escort them to the gate and say bye-bye. Shake hands. So we were basically a concierge, right? So we were concierge. I was a concierge. Now, what this gave us was a ringside view of the interviews, the placement process, you know, and things like that. Now, there were 10 interview rooms all next to each other in dorm number two, right? And there was a foyer outside, these 10 rooms, where all the candidates would, all the applicants who'd been shortlisted would get, come at the, you know, maybe half an hour before the interview, and they'd mill around, and then you'd say, okay, you go here, you know, you direct the traffic. And then you'd go inside the room and say, can I help you? Anything you need? Pani chahiye, you know, whatever. Now, what had happened was that, so day one of placement, there were 4 companies that came. So day one slot was a very prized slot. Companies would compete for it. And students would vote on the most preferred companies. And depending on the vote, the companies would be decided. Okay, so day one companies are Citibank, Bank of America, Hindustan Lever, and Procter & Gamble. So Hindustan Lever had come with 4 people to interview. Citibank had come with 8. So basically, Citibank was running 4 interview panels and Lever was running 2. Now, the Lever head of HR who was there, and he was an alumnus of IMA, and essentially all companies sent alumni for interviews. Okay. So they were all alumni in those 10 rooms. The Lever guys got worried that, listen, Citibank will interview twice as fast as us. They will make people job offers. People will accept them. And if you accept a job offer, you're out of placement. And they won't even come for our final interviews. So we lose talent. So what the Lever guys began to do is, if they liked a person in the first interview itself, no second round, within 15-20 minutes, they began to pull out a pro forma letter. Here's a job offer. Write accepted. Come with me to placement office and drop out of placement and don't go for any Citibank interviews.
Okay.
Now, otherwise, I'm tearing up his letter. Now, that is completely against placement rules. Because placement rules were that you could get up to 2 offers. And if you got an offer, you had 48 hours to say yes or no. If you said yes to an offer, you're out of placement. If you said no, you could still get a second, still go for a second job. But if you get 2 offers, you're out of placement. Okay, so this was a huge issue because, you know, you don't want to defy the head of HR of Hindustan Lever. You are going to join as a management trainee. What if you don't get Citibank? Of course, if Lever was always your first choice, you'd be happy to sign, right? So some people signed happily. Some people signed under duress. Some people ran away and said, I'm going to the toilet and didn't come back. because they wanted to go for the other interviews. It was not their first choice. Okay, so the Citibank guys found out about it, you know, because somebody went and told them, ye ho raha hai yahan pe. I can't come for your interview. I've got this, you know. So there was, they barge into the Lever room, they start screaming and shouting, and you know, they almost came to blows. And I was witnessing all this, right? And that's when this whole, you know, stamp, that phrase had not been coined, war for talent, but I saw it in real life in 1989, in March 1989, right? And from there, I got our first product idea, saying that look, companies compete like this for talent on IIM campuses. Then, if somebody were to do a salary survey of what companies are paying fresh MBAs on IIM campuses, that report would sell because people will want to fine tune their job offers, their salary offers, this is what competition is offering or offered last year, and say, okay, we'll take it up 20%, 15%, 10%, job here, which is what our first product was. So a friend and I started this company in 50-50 partnership, InfoEdge, same name, and our first product was a salary survey of what companies are paying fresh MBAs on campus.
But this sounds like a somewhat of a niche product. No? How many companies would want to benchmark against IIM salaries?
All the ones who go to IIM for recruitment. So, you know, there will be a pool of 300-400 companies because these are IIM, right? Some companies don't go to IIM but go to engineering colleges may still find it useful to, you know, we'll pay 20% less for a first degree. And, you know, I mean, there was a market. And we felt that if you priced it at, say, 3.5, you did a report once and you priced it at 3,500 rupees, you know, we were able. So what we did was, through our own efforts, we got the data. Then we went to the JNU library and appointment ads from back issues of Times of India, Economic Times, Business India. We noted down the addresses and designations from all of HR managers from all the appointment ads. We built a database of 800. Right? In those days, computers were really expensive. It cost 1.4 lakh rupees for a PC, XT, you know, 20 MB hard disk, 640 KB RAM, mono monitor, you know, 500 quarter inch floppy drive. Right? 1 lakh 40,000 rupees was about 4 times the annual annual salary of a fresh graduate of IMA. Okay, so clearly we could not afford a computer. So in those days, a company would have one computer and then 20 people share it. It would be in a separate room, covered in a plastic dust jacket. That was the only room that would be air-conditioned, right? So I went to a I spoke to a friend who had an interiors company, and he had one computer. That company had one computer. I said, you know, I really want to, may I take some computer time from you? He said, yeah, come at 10 p.m. and leave by 4 a.m. And he gave me a set of duplicate keys to his office. It was a DDA flat in Sheikh Sarai Phase 1. So we used to sneak in there at 10 p.m. and work till 3 a.m. And we hammered out the report. We mail merged and sent out letters to 800 companies. And we said, this is the report. These are the companies, 135 companies, priced at 3,500 rupees. Send the check in. We didn't have an office, right? Send the check or draft in advance and we'll ship you the report. From the report, we had a copy of an IT, master copy. And within 3 weeks, we had 23 checks and drafts. We had 80,500 rupees. And we said, wow, this product has succeeded because, you know, the 94-95% margin product. Ek report ko photocopy karne mein, bind karne mein, courier karne mein, 200 rupees lagte hain. 500 ka tha. And money's in advance. And then we repeat mail. And so we did reasonably well. Now this is, okay, so that was our first product. You know, and that taught me a huge lesson. That, look, successful businesses are built on deep customer insights. Deep customer insights about what? About unsolved problems of the customer, right? The experience during placement at IMA, and I saw Citi Bank and Lever fighting, gave me an insight that logon ko ye chahiye hoga. I was damn sure, right? And when you solve an unsolved problem, you know, you hit a hot button. Because customers will then buy without you having to sell. Ek chitti, you know, 70,000 rupees profit, 2 years of my annual salary. Okay? So what I always tell entrepreneurs today is, or a question I always ask before we invest is, how do you get the idea? And the answer tells me a lot. So when I met Deepinder Goyal of Zomato for the first time, I asked him, Deepinder, your idea kahan se aaya? And he said, I used to work in Bain Consulting. I had joined there 1 year after I finished IIT. And Bain Consulting was an office in Gurgaon, peopled by mostly by young men who would not bring food from home, but work long hours. Therefore, they would have lunch and dinner in the office. Office had a cafeteria that did not serve food, but you could bring your own food and eat. And he said that to make life easy, the admin team had collated the delivery menus of some 80 restaurants that would deliver to that location and put them in a file folder. And Deepinder said, you know, ek baje line lagati thi to see the file folder. You know, meko aadha tha, you know, to wait. I was hungry. I had to work to do. You know, uske baad order karo. You know, huge thing. So one Saturday I came in and I scanned all those menu cards and uploaded them on my personal page on the office intranet. So within 2 days, the IT infra guy came to me and said, what have you done? Why is all the internal traffic going to your page? And he said, that's when I got the customer insight. I was solving a problem for myself. It turns out that it's a sabki problem thi. And that's when I realized that, look, aggregation of menu cards has got value. If you aggregate menu cards of all restaurants in Delhi NCR and put them up on a website along with some details of the restaurant and some pictures, traffic aayega. Right, and that's what he did on weekends. He took permission from his country manager, say, I want to work on a personal project. He said, sure, go ahead. And he went and
built up the first version of
Artso restaurant ke menu cards leke.
Okay,
they launched a site called Foodie Bay. Foodie Bay will later change its name to Zomato.
So, how much revenue did you do in the first year through this salary survey? And was that
a lakh and something?
Okay, how did that sustain you? Like, you know, what was the
we weren't taking a salary, we didn't have an office, we didn't have employees. Hamara khacha 2,500 rupees tha. With the money that we made, we did two things. Hindustan Times mein, Sunday ko, I don't know if it's still there, but classifieds mein, for sale hota tha, classifieds. Usme, you know, this is 89, so there you don't, you know, this is pre-liberalization, you know, you don't get great foreign products, you weren't getting it, right? So there's a diplomat leaving sales, right? Oh, diplomat ja raha hai wapas, toh sab kuch bech ke ja raha hai, you know, his furniture, his this, his that, whatever, right? So we used to go through the for sale ads every Sunday. So one Sunday, there was a diplomat leaving advertisement. Oh, friends calling me, uska ghar tha, aur wo, they used to have these auctioneers who would manage the sale, right? The diplomat was not himself selling. I mean, there'll be somebody else doing it for him. I'll take a commission, right? So we decided, you know, the sale is ending at 5 p.m. It's 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. or 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Let us go there at 4:30. Jo bacha ko ja saman hai na, we can negotiate it down because, you know, they have to sell. So we went there and we bought some furniture. I went to my father and I said, can I use the servant quarter, which is lying khali? He said, sure. So wahan pe humne furniture dal diya, servant quarter mein. Then the next Sunday, we saw another ad. Says school teacher leaving for Nauru, computer teacher, selling old computer, 20,000 rupees. So we went there, oh, Green Park. And it was a really beat up ramshackle old computer. But there was a computer there was a printer and there was a CVT. सब कुछ उसने हमें दे दिया 24,000 में. बस यूज़ इन हरी डिलीवर आल्सो. तो अब हमारे पास फर्नीचर था, ऑफिस था और कंप्यूटर भी था, प्रिंटर भी था. नाउ वी वुड डिडंट हैव टू डू दिस यू नो 10 पीएम टू 4 एएम नंबर, राइट? द नेक्स्ट थिंग, देयर वाज अ एड इन द पेपर्स सेइंग द WHO इज ऑक्शनिंग इट्स ओल्ड फर्नीचर एंड कंप्यूटर्स. Okay, again, you know, the professional auctioner. So I went there. And for 9,000 rupees, I bought a twin floppy drive laptop with no hard disk, mono monitor. Now we had two computers. Hum do log the. So it was fine, right? So, thoda infrastructure khada ho gaya. And then we launched the second product. So Kapil Verma, who was my partner, his uncle was a very senior and eminent intellectual property attorney. So Kapil in his college days had done a summer internship at his uncle's office. So intellectual property means, you know, trademark, patents, you know, design, copyright.
Right.
So a trademark means a brand, a logo, something that distinguishes your product from that of another manufacturer or seller. Right. And trademarks in India are governed by the Trade and Merchandise Marks Act. Right. Government ka act hai under which trademarks are governed. There's a body called a trademark registry which administers this act. So the Trademarks Act says that if you register your trademark, your brand name with the trademark registry for a particular product category, then you have the exclusive right to use that name for that product within the territory of India. So if Hindustan Lever has registered a trademark Surf, which it has registered, then for detergents, then only Hindustan Lever is allowed
to sell using that.
To sell Surf, sell detergent in the brand name Surf. Now, obviously, to protect your goodwill, you know, every company would want to register a trademark. The only problem was that the trademark registry would take 5 years from date of application, roughly, to say yes or no, are you registered or not registered. Now, one of the big reasons for denying registration was there's an identical or similar trademark applied for or registered before you. First come, first served. This guy's ahead in the queue or he's already registered. Sorry, you can't get this. Now, companies don't want to wait 5 years before launching a new brand. You know, they start thinking now, they launch in 2 years, 3 years. Agar aapne launch kar diya, and after you launch, 2-3 saal baad, the trademark says, sorry, your trademark is not registered, change your name.
Yeah, and you already invested.
But you already spent money on marketing.
Right.
Okay, I mean, there's crores of rupees down the drain. Now, under the rules of the Trademarks Act, the trademark registry is supposed to maintain a record of all registered and pending trademarks open for public inspection. And it was doing it in the trademark office, registry office in Bombay in Fort. In the library, you could inspect all the registered and pending trademarks. Right. So what companies would do is they would hire lawyers to go and search that record and then give a report on likelihood of this being approved. So agar to unko mila ki koi hai already, change your name before you launch. Koi naya naam socho, but there's no conflict. Agar nahi mila, go ahead. Now, the way things would work is that, look, big companies hire big lawyers. These big lawyers would contract somebody in Bombay, another big lawyer in Bombay, who would then subcontract it, So the guy who actually searched his record would be a very low-tech junior fellow who was qualified as a lawyer, but couldn't do much else.
Like, right? A clerk, basically.
Yeah. So Kapil, when he was doing his internship with his uncle said, son, I have these 5 trademarks from this MNC client from overseas, right? Can you go to Bombay and do a search? Now, the way the economics would work is that, you know, MNC clients pay 3,000 rupees to the big lawyer. The guy, with all the subcontracting, the guy at the bottom doing it would get 150 rupees, right? So now this is a pharma company client, right? So Kapil went to Bombay and he told me, you know, I was aghast at the conditions there. He said, it was a, you know, library. He said, the record is not computerized. The record is not maintained in alphabetical order of trademark.
Okay.
In register, right? The record is maintained in reverse chronological order of date of application in files with 2 pages to an application. Thankfully, every separate product category had a different set of files. So there were 6 lakh registered and pending trademarks in India across 32 product categories in 1989-90. Of these, class 5, which is pharmaceuticals, was the largest. So it had 80,000 trademarks registered and applied for. Now, in order to do a search, you would have to see 1,60,000 pages for 150 rupees. So clearly, it's not a very reliable process, right? First of all, the guy would wait for 10-15 searches to accumulate. Ki main 1,60,000 page kab dekhun, jab mereko kam se kam, you know, 1,500-2,000 rupees mile. So the queue builds up, right? So it takes time. Then it's manually unreliable. So Kapil said, if we can somehow transcribe just the pharma record and come out and dump it on a computer, and we can sell computer searches faster, more reliable, cheaper. And that's what we did. Kapil went in there, paid the library fees, hired 10 students from Elphinstone College, gave them registers, said, ye meko 6 fields chahiye, ye meko 6 column bharo. And he did 1 register per file. So he came back in a month's time with 2 suitcases of a register saying, this is the pharma record. We gave it to a data entry company. They dumped it on a computer. You know, I hammered out some code. I am not a techie, but, you know, I had done 1 or 2 courses in IMA. So I looked the solid examples from the textbooks and hammered out some code, right? had, and we had a trademark searching software and trademark database ready. Once again, deep customer insight. For the life of me, I would never have thought of this idea, but Kapil had seen it. He'd experienced the problem, and he knew that this is the last mile, the weakest link in the chain. So that way. So once again, deep customer insight, I'll solve problem. Now, we again did the same technique. We got directly the pharma organizations, associations. We sent them all letters saying we can do a search in 24 hours, try us. And we began to get orders with money in advance. Okay. And we had a second successful product.
This was more like a service, right? Like, I mean, you were like per search, you would charge something.
You have a database, you're querying it, you're producing a report and taking a printout and querying it. So we email later, internet later. This is 1990. Okay.
And how much revenue did this contribute?
I think between the two, we were able to do 5-6 lakh in the second year. And both were 95% margin products. Okay. And in 92, that kind of money was very good, actually, if you want to run a lifestyle business. So life went on. And then in 93, couple that decided to go separate ways. Okay. We weren't agreeing on many things. So we felt it's better that we part ways.
So what happened to the products that you had built? Like, did this stay with you?
So he kept his idea. I kept my idea. So he took a trademark database with him. I took the salary survey with me. I took the Influent brand with me. He took the Indmark, which is a brand of the trademark search service, with him. There were two companies. He kept one. I kept one. We divided the employees and we divided the physical assets. By now we had employees. So we employed Bharti. Now those employees have part. Mere pass, part with his. Aadhe computer, mere pass, aadhe uske pass.
But he would have got more revenue, na? I imagine that trademark business would be generating.
Yeah, in terms of revenue, roughly the same. I mean, look, he had a more valuable asset because that database is a huge asset, right? But he owned the idea. So I said it must go. Idea was coming. I had a salary survey. Idea mera tha. That stayed with me. So I did a salary survey for a few years. And what had happened was in 92, before Kapil and I split up, the Department of Telecom had put out a big ad in the papers in both TOI and HT in Delhi, saying we are launching a video TEX service where there'll be one server in one telephone exchange and there'll be 50 public access terminals all over Delhi. And they said we want private information providers, PIPs. These would be private people or organizations who would own and maintain databases on the server, which the public would access for a fee from these public access terminals, right? And there'd be revenue share, 50-50. They won't charge us money for hosting the data and they will not pay us money to build a database. Database aap khud banao, apne kharche pe, hum revenue share karenge. Now, what had happened was that when I was in my last job in HMM, I used to observe that all my colleagues, in the marketing department, all highly qualified from the IIMs and the premier business schools, FMS, Bajaj, right? They would all sit in an open hall. And I used to observe that when the office copy of Business India would come in, everybody would read it from the back. Because there used to be 35 to 40 pages of appointment ads at the back of Business India in those days. And I thought that to be very, very peculiar behavior. And I said, this is strange. I thought people did, read magazines for the articles. But from there, I got the insight that jobs are a high-interest category of information. So this insight stayed with me. I had no idea what to do with it, But this insight stayed with me. So 92 mein jab ye ad aaya, I said, why don't we take job information from all published sources, newspapers and magazines around the country and dump it on the server. People will pay money. Okay. And over time, we can charge people to add more jobs to the database. So you can make money two ways. So agar akhbar mein nahi dala hai aapne, directly lena chahte hain, to aap hume 200 rupaye de diye, hum dal denge. That was the thought. So we applied, we got selected, and we worked for 6 to 9 months. Pure humne screen bana diye the, navigation, sab kuch bana diya humne. It was going to be called JobNet. Okay. And after 9 months, we were called for one more meeting. Sorry, the plan has been shelved because the budget has been cancelled. But the idea was cooked in 93. There was no internet. So I said, file and forget. Now, it had been my idea. So this idea came with me when Kapil and I went separate ways, right? On the same principle. You keep trademarks, you keep your ideas, I keep my ideas. Ownership of ideas is very important. In 96, when I saw the net for the first time at an expo in Pragati Maidan, a penny dropped and I said, let's just put up our jobs from all over the place, every public, and put them up over here. So that's what we did. We used to get 29 newspapers and magazines from around the country. We used to put jobs in our own format, in our own words, and put them on the website when we launched. And sure enough, traffic began to come. Because jobs are a high-interest category of information, I had that insight. So all three businesses, and Zomato, right, have been informed by deep customer insight. And that's how they succeeded without spending money on advertising.
So, when you launched Naukri.com, how big was the internet? What were the user base in India?
So, in the year 2000, So when we launched Naukri, there were 14,000 internet accounts in the country. Probably shared accounts, so 2 lakh log honge.
Okay.
Right? Office mein toh 8-10 log share karenge.
And how much traffic did you get over a year?
I don't recall, but in a day we'd get 1,000 visits, 2,000 visits. That's a big deal for us.
Okay. So, 1 lakh plus toh aapka ho gaya hoga. Half of internet users in India would have been visiting this.
Malum nahi mujhe. That's all. Guess estimates. You know, when we raised venture capital in April 2000, there were about 4 million internet users in India.
Okay. So, how did this scale up into like a, you know, like the business which it is today, like from a listing? Like,
so, humne website launch ki on April 1, 1997, right? We were ready in the second half of March, but he said, yeah, let's do it in the new financial year. You know, so your accounts are for that financial year only. You don't have to submit separate accounts for just 15 days. So we delayed the launch and we launched April 1. Now, we just kept putting jobs and traffic began to come. See, what in those days, internet was a new field. The internet had begun to get press coverage in India, right? But there were more NRIs on the net than there were Indians in India on the net. Therefore, every other site was targeting overseas Indians. But these publications in India, their readership was Hindustani in India. So they would invariably, for the benefit of the readers, talk about sites that are relevant to them. So we began to get a huge amount of press coverage without having a PR agency, without trying. Right. So in the first 2 years, we had two files of press clippings, two fat files of press clippings. We didn't have a PR agency. That's one more advantage of early mover. And we saw it. So our brand ban gaya, log aane lage. So we were taking jobs for free from newspapers. In September, I got a call. We got a call. And you know, those days, you know, mobile phones were kam the. Telephones ke liye 8 saal ki waiting list thi. So the phone was sitting on my desk. By now, we had shifted out of 7th quarter. We were now in the second floor of the house, 2,000 square foot, my dad's house. And I would pick up the phone. And this guy says, I'm from so-and-so company in Pune. I do a small size auto component company in Pune. You have taken my jobs from newspapers earlier and I've got good response from you. I have got 6 jobs which I have not put in newspaper. I send them to you. Will you put them up? Sir, it'll cost you some money. We'll charge you for it. So how much? I had not thought of any pricing anything. So again, move se nikal gaya, 350 rupees per job. And 350 rupees because the trademark search engine price is 350 rupees many years ago. So that number was in my head when I bold diya. And that became the price of a single job listing and naukri for the next 10 years, 15 years. This guy sent a check along with the jobs by courier. And we had a revenue model. So we took all the jobs for the last 6 months, all the old jobs, the expired jobs. Un sab se humne address nikale aur 3000 ka mailing list ban gaya. We sent these people letters saying, bhai, ye naukri hai, ye internet hai, ye format hai. 350 rupees single job listing or 6000 rupees annual subscription, unlimited listings for your company through the year. And revenue began to come in. We said send money in advance once again. So in the second half of the year, from September to March, we did about 2,36,000 rupees revenue. We probably lost money maybe 4-5 lakh rupees for the year. But agle saal, this thing went to 18 lakhs on the same strategy as mailing out. Now, I had never seen anything grow 7x, even of a small base. And 18 lakhs meant it was as big as the company had ever been, which basically means that in 1 year, you got a product that otherwise it took you 8-10 years to get to.
And this 18 lakhs was without any feet on street sales happening?
Direct mail.
Okay.
So, we closed everything else. No salary survey, no teaching, no training, no nothing, no consulting. I did 100 odd jobs to survive before that.
So, most of those odd jobs would have come on the back of the IMA tag. Like
network, IMA tag, jo bhi bol do. So, and the next year, it went to 36 lakhs.
Okay.
All through direct mail. That's how the company grew.
Okay. So, in 2000, when ICICI invested, what kind of revenue were you at and what was the reason to take the funding?
Okay, so I'll tell you. Around mid-99, we had just done the 18 lakh year and I was targeting 50-60 lakhs this coming year in my head. You know, I had no plan to achieve it. I said, ho sakta hai. And I said, agar 50-60 lakh ban gaya, toh 10 lakh profit ho jayega. So we were set, I thought. You know, 10 lakh profit is very decent for a good lifestyle business in 1992. And I began to get calls from people saying, we want to talk to you. We want to invest in your company. And we were completely baffled. You see, I was totally cut off from the rest of the world. We did not know that there's something called a dot-com valuation. I'd never heard of venture capital. Nothing. I said, you know, you run a business, you put in some capital, and then you get customer money, and then profit banao, business grow karo, profit.
Dhanda mentality, basically.
Yeah, I mean, right? And I was baffled. So I went for a couple of meetings, and people were offering me, you know, we will pay you $2 billion. We'll invest $2 million for 25% of your company. I was like shocked. I was doing the math and in my head, and at $2, so I said, yeah, it's 8 crore for a company that's just done 18 lakhs. And I was shocked, but I couldn't believe it, you know, and it sounded too good to be true. And I asked him, but you know, 8 crores, what should we do with the money? He said, you spend it on advertising, that'll build brand and barrier to entry, and then we'll raise twice the money at 4 times the valuation in 6 months' time. And then 1 year from now, we'll list you on NASDAQ.
Okay, okay.
And I didn't know what NASDAQ was. I knew vaguely it got something to do with the stock exchange in US. I don't know what it is. I've heard of it, but I don't know what it is. Right? And I'm saying, yeah, boss, hum to Jamuna Par mein complete rah rahe hain. Abhi bijli aati nahi hai. Okay, 18 lakh turnover kiya humne. We are breaking even because I'm not taking a salary. You know, the ACs don't work. Power theek nahi hai. We can't afford power backup. He's not been to my office. He's just meeting with a five-star hotel, making an offer. And he'll make me sign a fat, complicated agreement. And he wants to reach out to the board and he wants to list the company on NASDAQ. And, and I have taken 10 years to reach here of slogging. And those 10 years, I'm not taking salary for 6 years. Because, you know, you're taking salary when the company will pay you and not taking when the company couldn't pay you. I'm saying, yaar, ye kaise hoga? So then he said, I told him, boss, if you spend 8 crore on advertising, you'll never recover the money. I work in advertising, I know. Agar main 8 crore kharch diya, to hamara revenue nahi badhega. Na, take it to 50 lakh, 1 crore, that's it. So we'll make a loss. And we're currently a profitable company. We were profitable because I was not taking a salary, but we were profitable. So he said, there's a problem with you Indians. You want to make a profit on the internet, you have a vision problem. This kind of language I just didn't understand. So I said, I'll get back to you. And after 2 days, I got back saying, boss, thank you so much. I'm very happy to be in a small company and make a profit. But then in February 2000, this is mid-99, February 2000, job that I had launched with a launch ad budget that was twice our annual turnover. We were close at 36 lakhs. Only 75 lakhs with TV ads on India, Pakistan cricket season in Sharjah when they launched. And that frightened us. We said, the game has changed. You cannot be a 50 lakh company and make a 10 lakh rupee profit anymore. You have to be within 2 years a 5 crore company make a 50 lakh rupee profit. Get from orbit A to orbit B, you need to invest money and be prepared to lose that money for 2 years. So we went back into the market. We approached 4 venture capitalists. By then I'd figured out venture capital kya hota hai, all that, right? We got 3 term sheets. It was bubble time. We went with ICICI Venture. Even though it was not the highest valuation, they were lower. We just felt more comfortable. We said, because they were saying, we know businesses take time to build in India. We don't want you to list in NASDAQ in a year, 2 years. We don't have those kind of expectations. And we felt comfortable with that. And that's how we raised venture capital. We got really lucky. We put the money in fixed deposit and said, now this is the only money we'll ever get. We have to make it on this. We got lucky in the timing.
So how did your approach change after that? Like in terms of what your...
So humne to bahut hard tight rakha. We took an office at 10 rupees a square foot in the back lanes of Noida among rubber and chemical factories with open drains which would flood in the monsoon. But we spent 1/4 of our venture capital raise on the interiors. We said, ek bari ab aa jao yahan pe. It looks like an MNC office, so employees are important. They must be comfortable once they're here. But why give the landlord the money? So we hired people, we hired sales teams, we hired, and so first year after raising venture capital, we lost 2.5 crores. Second year, we lost 1.14 crores. Third year, we broke it.
Change of strategy was that you spent on sales. Like earlier, you were just doing...
No. We spent on sales and we spent on tech and product. We did not spend on advertising. So we hired a sales team. So which brings me to my next point. You see, today, what I say is that for any startup to scale, it needs to find its repeatable, profitable unit.
So what do you mean by that? Repeatable, profitable unit?
So I'll tell you. So one day, sales was not moving. We were doing 3 lakh money. Okay. 6 months after taking the money, it was not moving. No matter how much you mailed out, you would not get more sales than 3 lakhs a month.
And this was through the mail order kind of a model?
Directly.
Okay.
So Hitesh had joined by then. Hitesh joined in Feb 2000, just before we raised venture capital. But we didn't talk for 6 months before that. So it's not one month later, but February mein aaya. So Hitesh came to me and said, listen, why don't we hire some salespeople and send them to make sales calls and see what happens? So when I told him, sure, he went and hired 4 salespeople in Delhi. And we discovered within 3 to 4 months, 5 months, 6 months. So a fully loaded cost of a salesperson, tankha, conveyance, incentive, mobile phone bill reimbursement, depreciation on computer, hot desking, office rent, air conditioning, depreciation on furniture, and so on. So mila bolu ke 22,000 rupees a month, right? Now, we discovered that the average salesperson in 6 months was generating 50,000 rupees ki revenue headed north. Our variable cost was not, which basically means that each salesperson was making a 28,000 rupee profit for us. And this profit was increasing month on month because you're selling more and more every month. You're getting more productive. We were also launching more products, which are more expensive. So you could get a higher a bigger check from client.
Okay, like the hot jobs and premium
vacancies.
That's right.
Okay, so we said this is great. We should simply expand by hiring more and more salespeople. And within 2 years, we had 240 salespeople in 11 offices around the country. And we had scaled 35x in 3 years, in 2.5 years, in terms of revenue. And we were now doing 10 crores and making a 10 crores and making an 80 lakh profit.
So building the sales team was largely...
The salesperson for us was the repeatable profitable unit. So har ek company ko apna repeatable profitable unit dhoondna padega agar skill hona hai.
Can you give me other examples of other companies? What could be like a repeatable profitable unit?
No, it could be a hamburger. It could be one restaurant outlet, each restaurant outlet is profitable. Then you can just repeat that. It could be whatever. I mean, har ek company alag hoga. Zomato ke liye har delivery hogi. You make a profit per delivery, repeat it.
So you discovered the repeatable profitable unit as the sales.
We didn't call it that time. We simply said common sense. Yeah, sales come on the profit. Sales come on the profit. Nara up next on table or put more sales guys, and that's how you recover your overheads. Your margin will go.
So do you have some lessons on building a sales organization or building a large sales operations? I mean, I think
the truth is that effort was led by Hitesh more than me. But yes, I mean, I was there, so I have some insights. But we hired some really good people who would report to Hitesh. They were branch managers, regional managers. We figured we must source them from B2B sales companies that were known for good practice. Xerox is one of them. So two of our regional managers came from Xerox. And then we said, okay, replicate your training, replicate your processes. You know, we had sales incentives, scheme design, we had, all those things. But fundamentally, as a founder and entrepreneur, apart from hiring right salespeople, you have to be willing to lead from the front. Okay? Which means aap sales call ke liye jaoge or salesperson ke saath. Okay? So I remember 9/11 happened. In October of that year, Hitesh did 80 plus sales calls himself with the local sales teams. He was traveling all over the country. And I did 60 plus sales calls myself, traveling all over the country. Because that's how salespeople will observe you and learn to sell. You will be your best salesperson because you know the product and you're passionate about it. Salespeople will believe they're important to the company because you're doing the same job yourself. So, that's how you scale.
So you started doing diversification pretty early on. I can see on your website, Quadrangle was the first acquisition you did.
Quadrangle was a company we acquired in the year 2000. We didn't know what would grow, what would not grow, and how much it would grow. Meltdown aaya tha. We were only 4 million intent users. We did not know what would scale. So it was one of those things we said, maybe this will scale.
What was Quadrangle?
It was a recruitment firm.
Okay. But obviously the Naukri business was like a much bigger business.
Yeah.
Than the search.
It ended up being much bigger.
Okay. But is Quadrangle still running? Does it still contribute?
It's running and it's breaking even and there are people working there and it's fine.
And then you started Jeevan Sathi in 04?
No, we started Jeevan Sathi in 98. So 98 May, so we said we've done jobs, let's do one more classified category. And we got Jeevan Sathi, they're completely free site and we spent no time on it, just floated it. So you could register free, search free, contact free, support free, fully open site. Now when we raised venture capital on ICICI Venture, they told us, what is the Jeevan Sathi? We've invested in Naukri, we want all your efforts behind Naukri. So we said, okay. So one of the other conditions in the agreement was that you will change your auditors. We want one of the big five. Stem five was it, right? So we went to our old auditors. They were two brothers, 1 year senior to me and 3 years senior to me from school. I knew them. Good guys who do a good job of audits. And I went there to tell them, ki, guys, I'm really sorry, but we have to let go of you and shift our audit because ICICI Venture is insisting. So we said, we're CA practice and .com.
Okay.
Bubble tha, boom tha. So we were very good. Aap Jeevan Sathi le lo humse. So we told them, ki, boss, hum 45% rakhenge, aap baki rakh lo, free of cost, right? But mehnat lagao. So, if you make a profit, you take a salary. Hamara 45% hoga is company. So we gave them Jeevan Sathi 55% on the promise that they would work hard and not ask for more money. So they worked hard for 4 years and wasn't going anywhere. 3-4 lakh money kharidi revenue when we said, let's buy it back because now we're profitable. Then we bought it back. And that's how Jeevan Sathi came back to us. Then a year later, we launched, this is 2004, a year later, we launched 99acres. 2005, we launched 99acres.
So that was again to further grow in the classified listing space. So there was property listing.
Yeah.
Okay. So why did you decide to go to the IPO route? What is the...
Well, we had to give the investor an exit. We wanted ESOP to have value. We wanted to get capital to the company for strategic purposes. We wanted to, put ourselves in a different strategic space, that we will always have access to capital. Our stock will have currency and we'll be truly independent.
Okay. And post IPO, again, you did a lot of VC bets in a way in a lot of companies. So what was the rationale behind the bets you took? How did you decide which company?
We had this bunch of money we raised. And one of the reasons we said we're raising it is to make acquisitions. Mm-hmm. But when we went out to look for acquisitions, we found there's nothing worthwhile available at a reasonable price. Okay. So we said, okay, next best thing is to invest behind other startups. Which is what we did. And that has actually panned out fairly well.
So what were your learnings from being a VC? Like, you know, what were the good bets and the bad bets?
I think we see 1,000 startups to invest in maybe 5 or 6, right? So we have 5-10 startups over the last decade, right? You learn a lot, yeah, about business models, people, entrepreneurs, what works, what doesn't work, what could work, and so on. So I think we've learned a lot. I think we've learned what works, what scales, what makes profit, what doesn't make profit. We learned the importance of natural traction. We learned the importance of being market leaders. We learned the importance of, you know, being a winner in a winner record market, importance of network effect. That's good. Thodi bahut logon ki pehchan ho gayi hai.
Okay. So, do you invest in like the angel level also, or like, you know, at what?
Personally, no. Listen, I don't invest in tech companies personally because the company does that. I don't want a conflict of interest. So the company does. We do from very early to Series A.
Okay, very early meaning post revenue, or you do pre revenue also?
We have done. So Policy Bazaar was a PowerPoint when we invested.
And you know, like, if you could elaborate a bit on the models that you've made, like, you know, what are the things that are like strong check boxes for you to make an investment?
I think we look for signs of natural traction. If it's already launched the product, is it getting traffic, downloads without having to advertise? Is the word of mouth good? Is it solving an unsolved problem? What's the competitive landscape like? Is there some IP? Can they build a moat? You know, what's the defensibility? If not now, can it be done going forward? How good is the team? It's one thing to have a couple of founders who are running a team of 8-10 people, but when this company scales up, it might have 5,000 people. Are there sort of people who can run teams of 5,000? Can they build trust across the table? Will people want to work with them? Some of the judgment calls, some of them take on faith.
So did you see these trades in Dipinder when you invested?
See, Dipinder, look, it's very hard to say ki ye aadmi 10,000 logon ki company chala lega when he's 28 years old.
Right.
But he looked okay on that front to me. Nothing negative there. But you can't positively say that, right? But what I did see was natural traction. I did see product clarity. I did see, you know, a huge desire to, you know, stay on for the long haul. Okay. And I saw a great product and huge customer insight.
And what did you see in Policy Bazaar when you invested, when it was just a PPT?
Again, good team and very powerful value prop. He came to me and he said that I'm willing to bet you're spending 60% more for your car insurance than you need to. And I said, don't be silly. You know, in my head, insurance was a commodity. Yeah, some publisher and company, why would they overcharge?
Right.
And he said, pull out your insurance. So I pulled out my car insurance and he got me some 12 alternate quotes. And sure enough, you know, the lowest quote was 40% lower than what I was paying. He said, there's so much variability in pricing, the same policy across companies that you can't imagine. The customer does not know. The moment you tell the customer, it's a huge revelation. And I said, this will work.
Okay. And what about Merit Nation? Like,
so Merit Nation, again, good team. I had known them from earlier. Good competency in education content and education, right? Initially, they showed great promise, but over time, they were overtaken by others. I think, you know, in sales execution, there was a bit of a lacuna, but good people otherwise.
And I recently did an interview with Tanu Tejas of Shop Kirana, whom you also invested in. So what did you see there?
Superb team, solving an unsolved problem, great traction, counterintuitive. You know, people say that e-commerce will take over and big retail will take over. But here was a guy making it happen for the small Kirana store in a manner that it works for the Kirana store and works for them. So new age distribution, and I liked it.
Okay. So my last question to you, what advice do you have for founders who are seeking to get invested by Info Edge or by you?
Talk to us. But, you know, see, do main bolta hun logon ko, number one, the customer money is better than the investors. If a customer paisa aa raha hai or repeatedly aa raha hai, and it is coming at a price that's higher than it costs you to deliver that product or service, then chances are you are viable profitable business so long as you can get enough customers giving you enough orders, right? And if customer ka paisa aa gaya to investor ka paisa zarur aayega, because investors love to invest behind businesses getting customer money.
Right,
lekin agar investor ka paisa aa gaya pehle, there is no guarantee of the customer's money, because the customer is not your uncle, your aunt, or your mother, father. He is not doing any favors. He is buying you because it works for him, and he's certainly buying a second time only if it works for him, but from the first time, right? But very often, you know, investor ka paisa lane mein, it's about making good PowerPoint and impressing two young MBAs across the table. It's not the same thing. So, agar focus on customer rather than investors. Second thing I say is that it's a great idea to raise money when the investor comes to you rather than you going to the investor. Because that is when you get your terms of trade and the valuation in the terms you want. So, focus on the customer, focus on, you know, somehow making a few things happen with the resources you already have. And when you have arrived at some place, that's when you...
Are there sectors that you are bullish on? Markets or sectors?
We don't do it top-down. We don't do it top-down. We do it bottom-up.
Okay.
We meet companies. Hmm. We go out and look at companies. And if something looks interesting, then we do it.
Okay.
And that becomes then a company of interest rather than sector of interest.
Hmm. Okay. Do you think there will be a company that will disrupt Naukri in the years to come? You know, like...
Yeah, God knows. I mean, there might well be. But it's our job to ensure it doesn't happen.
Hmm. Yeah. What do you think that could be? Like, if there was a company to disrupt in the...
We can't think of anything.
Hmm.
But if we can think of it, then we obviously take action against it or do the same thing ourselves.
Uh-huh. Okay. And what was the logic behind the IIM Jobs acquisition?
They built a good brand, a good niche, in a certain segment, we felt there was value there, and which, our tech sales team could actually leverage that value and make it a lot bigger. And very good founder. He's still with the company.
Wow, those were some amazing insights about building a unicorn. We hope that you are also able to identify deep customer problems on which to build your business and are able to scale it up by finding your repeatable, profitable unit. Like the Founder Thesis podcast, then do check out our other shows on subjects like marketing, technology, career advice, books, and drama. Visit thepodium.in, that is thepodium.in, for a complete list of all our shows.
This was an HD Smartcast original.
HD Smartcast.
Log on to hdsmartcast.com to listen to more such podcasts.